Okay.
EMS 8730. Hello, caller?
Relax, relax. We're trying to help you here.
This is not a job for everybody.
Losing fib now.
This is not a job to get rich or stuff like that.
Calm down. Everything's going to be okay.
We're the doctors of the street. That's what we are.
Welcome to EMS Office Hours. This is Jim Hoffman.
And this is Josh Knapp. EMS Office Hours is a live, weekly EMS podcast for all EMS professionals.
Discussing a variety of EMS topics and bringing your EMS concerns to light. So turn down that scanner and turn up your speakers.
And join us to find out what's really on the minds of EMS.
Hey, it's Jim Hoffman.
And Josh Knapp.
Josh, I'm trying to give you a chance to end the intro. And
Jim, at this exact moment, I was hearing an echo, and I had to shut off the web browser.
Oh, so I gotcha.
I am joining you once again for another exciting week of debate and discussion here on EMS Office Hours. So what do we got?
Something
about certifications?
Well, I'm going to tie this in a little bit, I think. I got to thinking a little bit last week.
That's dangerous, man.
I know.
We told you about that.
Yeah, well, last week I talked about professionalism in EMS, you know, and I started thinking about that and thinking about how, you know, to be this profession that we're in, this EMS profession that we're in, it's, you know, and you've said this before, and I've said it before, and we've heard people talk about this, and you know, how we own what we're doing and how we're kind of our own worst enemy when it comes to this, and we're so fractured and all over the place. And I started thinking about, you know, all these different certification levels that we have and how it varies from state to state and region to region, and how, you know, some states have different levels of, you know, paramedics and different levels of EMTs and the training and all that stuff. And I'm thinking, why do we have to have all these different certification levels all over the place, confusing the providers themselves as to where the hell they fit in all of this, and on top of that, making it confusing for the rest of the healthcare industry to try to figure out where we fit in.
Well, it's all a part of the plot. It keeps us fractured. It keeps us, disjointed. We're always off balance, and that way we're never going to be able to figure out ourselves where we belong in the system. Why should they why should they give a shit?
And it's funny because, you know, like I'm going to mention some things. I don't think people are going to, you know, jump on board and stop patting me on the back and put me on the shoulders and start running me around. But, you know, I have to say, and you know, why do we even have to have the EMT level, you know, provider? Why can't paramedic be the entry level, you know, provider? And you're going to get people that are going to say, well, you know, it's. You know, the EMTs are for basic life support. Well, you know, paramedics are taught, you know, and most of them should be taught that it should be BLS before ALS, and we don't need EMTs there to stop bleeding or to tickle blood pressure. I mean, we're pretty competent in doing that ourselves, you know.
You know what? The public's pretty competent in doing that.
Well,
blood pressure, but stop it. You know, how many times you've shown up on the scene and civilians are taking care and they're doing exactly the same thing that an EMT would do except for transport? Talk about ruffling feathers. However, you know, you raised this just a couple of minutes before we got live online, and my original response was, dude, you can't do that. You got to have an entry level. You got to have an entry level for this. You got to have something, you know, 2,000 hours or 1,800 hours or 1,600 hours. That's a lot of dedication time. I mean, how do you justify that?
I justify it by, if you want to be an EMS and you wanted this to be your career and your profession, then you should be coming in with that dedication. There shouldn't be this stepladder to say, okay, well, I'm going to be EMT. I'm going to play around as an EMT for a while and drive the ambulance and, you know, take a blood pressure for the paramedic that I'm with or that came for my backup and transport people to the hospital. You should come into this with the mindset of, this is my career. This is my profession. It's going to take me whatever amount of time it is to get my paramedic, you know, certification or license in some places. And, you know, that's the way it should become. When nurses go into nursing, there's not a beginning, you know, level of nursing. There's not an EMT level for nursing. You're going to get your RN, you're getting your RN. There's not an EMT
level. Well, there's a couple of different levels for nursing.
But,
you're a nurse.
Right.
You're still
exactly.
a nurse.
That's what
and
I'm saying.
But you want to know something? I do believe that you have a point in the sense that it would be less confusing to the public. I've heard this argument in the other way. Why don't we call EMTs medics?
Right.
And then there's an aspect where anybody who's been through a medic program is going to say, BS, there's no way that an EMT deserves to be called a medic because there's so much more that you have to do to qualify to be a medic. And not even once, you have to do it repeatedly. And if you're in the National Registry, you got to do it every 2 years
yeah.
amongst an ACLS and PALS and all of the other crap.
And
know?
The thing is, though, is
a lot of work.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, this is what – and again, this kind of ties into last week's show a little bit when we talk about this being a profession and making it a profession and owning what we do. And I think part of that is owning the fact that we need to have a level of certification that meets a professional level. It's not a taxi ride, you know, with a bonus blood pressure thrown in. You know, it's patient care. It's assessing a patient, knowing what we're looking for when we assess a patient. You know, knowing what clinically what to look for on patients, knowing for trauma patients what we're looking for, you know, and you get some and beyond, if you think about it, even just beyond, the profession itself, you know, trying to find its way and get, you know, let's say it's going to want to do something like this. And you know, what about the public? Doesn't the public deserve the highest level of care that's going to be sent to them?
The public deserves the highest level of care they're willing to pay for. And I had this conversation with a medic that I work with, and I was like, you know, don't you want to earn a fair wage? And he's like, well, what is a fair wage? I think I earn a fair wage. And I'm like, dude, you work three frickin' jobs. You work here in your per diem, two other places. You're working, you know, 6 to 7 days a week. You know, and he said, well, that's nobody's fault but my own because I like the finer things in life. Well, screw that. There are so many people out there that do have jobs that are working, 40 hours a week that are affording the same things that we have to, that we can
right.
reaching on 30, you know.
And that's years. Something, too, that we talked about that a few weeks ago. We talked about getting paid for what we do. I mean, how do you justify an EMT, you know, getting paid, you know, more money when they're, in essence, they're not really providing that much more medical care. There's not much more they can do at the EMT level. They can go for additional training for, like, rescue and things like that. But when it comes to medical care, how much more are they going to get that they can provide to the public and then try to demand that additional, that additional payment? You know, it's like you get these EMTs, you're going to get an EMT gets on scene and it's a chest pain patient or they get there and it turns out to be, let's say, a patient having chest pain. What are they going to do? They're going to call for medics. Why not
right.
the medic? Why not just have ambulance staff with medics and then you get to the scene,
well,
you deal with whatever presents itself.
Now, here's the root of the point that you're getting to or one of the things that's going to affect the point you're getting to. I think, and I was just thinking of this just now when you said, yeah, you get an EMT to the scene. Think of our system. What do we have? We have a tiered response system. So theoretically, now you've worked in the city. You know exactly the way it doesn't work as well as I do. But theoretically, you're supposed to send out first responders who know basic first aid and can assess what the needs are. And then they can call for EMTs, and then the EMTs can say whether or not we need a higher level of medical authority
right.
and they or medical skills, and they call for medics.
Right.
That's the way it's supposed to work.
Right, but meanwhile, you know, while we're playing this game of tiered response, you know, the patient is suffering. They're not getting the treatment that they deserve, the treatment that they need for whatever is happening with them. And whether the chest pain whether the chest pain turns out to be, you know, nonsense chest pain, it turns out to be pleuritic or muscular or something like that, and it's not really a heart attack, you know, that's not found out or it's not totally evaluated until the paramedic gets on scene and does an EKG or does a more thorough history of the patient and, you know, clinical presentation and all that. you know.
Well, what about the damage? What about the damage of a misdiagnosis?
By who?
Well, the EMT gets on scene and says, you know, this is a cold. This isn't real. This isn't cardiac chest pain. Then they bring them, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, we've seen, there's mixed diagnosis by medics and EMTs.
Right.
But the thing is, I think that the probability is going to be a little higher when you have EMTs on calls that are making these decisions rather than having the medic who's got that additional training we've talked about is more dedicated to the career, more dedicated to what they're doing, okay, seeing it as a profession, you know, knowing going into it that it is a profession, is, you know, it requires additional training to make these clinical evaluations, to make these assessments and decide what the best course of treatment is going to be. I mean,
on a lot of toes here.
Well, here's my thing. I'm going to follow up with that, okay? It's not that I had this hate on for EMTs, okay?
Sounds like it.
No, my issue is, it's not that I'm having this issue.
Anyone who thinks Jim has a hate on for EMTs today, you can email him at the EMS professional.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's the thing. It's not that I have a hate on for EMTs. I'm thinking profession-wise. I'm thinking patient care-wise. What is best for them? If I'm saying, oh, I hate EMT, they all should die, and I want them out of the systems, and you know, I don't care what happens to them. I'm saying that I think the better, system, the better model, the better thing for patient care, for emergency departments, for the profession
that
they call, is to be, you know, as a paramedic level. Now, I got Russell Stein's on the line.
Russell! So
I'll bring him in, see if he wants to stir the pot a little bit.
Russell! Hey, what are we doing about Jim here? He has this major, you know, hard-on for EMTs tonight.
Well, I'm coming in kind of midstream, so...
Well, Russ, I'm trying to do this without upsetting EMTs in general, and I'm trying to focus this more on a professional level, like where, as a profession, wouldn't it be better just to have paramedics being the ones responding to calls, doing away with the EMTs, and having paramedics respond that have the higher level of training, the more equipment that they're prepared to treat patients that present themselves in various different ways, rather than have EMTs show up on scenes and call for medics and sit there waiting for medics or trying to intercept medics going to calls, you know, and just kind of letting that patient care kind of go to the wayside because we have these tiered response systems, we have these systems where, you know, EMTs respond, a volunteer EMTs respond, and then sit there waiting for medics to get, you know, to the call, you know, to assess a patient.
Well, you're probably upsetting a lot of volunteers right now.
Yeah, I might be saying upsetting a lot of people right now, but again, I'm not trying to point this out as a personal attack on the people that are doing it. I know it might sound this way. It might be coming across this way. Okay. I might have individual issues with individual EMTs, okay, and how they are on scene, how they are, maybe some EMTs are more medic dependent than others and things like that. But what I'm hoping to get out of this is to say, as a profession, in order to make this a profession and to make it something where the healthcare industry is looking upon us as a profession, that we don't have all these levels of EMS providers, that it focuses on the highest level we can initially provide, and that is as being a paramedic.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I see what you're saying, but something that came to mind when you were talking about is nursing, is that there's many different types of quote-unquote nurses. There's, you know, you got LPNs, licensed practical nurses. You have nursing assistants who are a little bit lower than LPNs, but they're all kind of considered within that
realm. There's RN, there's LPN, there's an associated nurse, that's an RN, right? You know, you go up. It's kind of interesting because we were talking about this from the reverse side last year, and the reverse side was, should we just eliminate the name, in-name EMT, but still have levels to the profession so the public now sees us as medics, and they call for medics, and it's up to our professional level to know where to dispatch who.
Yeah, but then you're talking about that smoke and mirrors for the general public, though. They're still not going to be getting that paramedic level of care, that paramedic level of training, that can assess somebody and clinically decide if what type of treatment they need or don't need. You know, I mean, listen, we all know most of the calls we go on are not ALS level calls. Most of them are going to be BLS level calls. And if it turns out, you know, some magical day where you've got paramedics that are responding to calls, and, you know, they're not going to get to do all of their paramedic skills on that call. They're going to wind up just kind of taking the blood pressure and transporting that patient to the hospital. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you've got this whole thing of EMTs getting on calls and, you know, waiting for medics to get there. And now the patient's suffering. You know, the delay of care is starts to take place.
Well, you're immediately coming from an angle that says, okay, but we have a limited resource. What was the last count? And I don't think it's changed for like 10 years. I mean, I know the Department of New York's website, you know, DOH website doesn't update too often. But it's roughly, what is it, 50,000 EMTs and 5,000 medics?
No, I don't know. I mean, in New York, you mean?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It's roughly some stupid number like that. It's about a 10-to-1 number. So
right.
Now if you eliminate all those other people who get into a bus and respond, what is the public going to do? I mean, I don't know if they're ready for that type of upheaval.
You mean as far as lack of response because there's not enough paramedics to talk
about? Well, yeah, I mean,
here's the thing,
to fill in the gap, right?
Well, here's my thing. I'm talking perfect world scenario here. I'm not talking about doing this tomorrow. I'm talking about, you know, this is something where I think that as an industry you should be focusing on.
Everything I look at is we got to have a road there. If we're gonna have a realistic conversation about this,
well, as I'm saying, we have to have a road there. But the road is not going to be doing away with, you know, with EMTs tomorrow. That's what you're saying.
Well, and then you start getting into the idea of when, let's say, you have 55,000 paramedics. I mean, how often are you actually going to get a touch on an advanced skill? I mean, then you're talking about skill. Then you're talking about big time skill degradation.
But here's the thing, though, Russell. If you think about it,
well, are we supposed to be practicing on the public, Russ?
Well, not just that, Josh, too. But you know what? It's like, okay, I know what Russ is saying, because now you're going to have, you know, all these, you're going to have this gigantic, you know, population of paramedics out there all trying to do skills. But you know, I'm thinking, and again, I'm coming at this from a point of looking at this as a in order to make this a profession, in order to get that standard out there that, you know, when you call 911, a paramedic is coming. Whether they do a paramedic level skill, whether they do just BLS, basic life support, you know, whatever it is, okay, it's the paramedic that's coming there, the paramedic that's assessing, and you can have confidence as someone calling 911 that you're getting the highest level care that you possibly can, regardless of what you need or don't need.
The way I think about it is that the measure of the profession, the professional, is the measure of their proficiency. It's not enough to be just a doctor. I mean, if you're a doctor that does it, let's say you're a surgeon and you only do one surgery a month. I mean, you're only, how proficient are you at doing? Let's say you only take out gallbladders. I mean, how often? You know, and that's the only surgery you do. How proficient are you when you're going to be called upon to do, you know, something more complicated? It's not going to be there.
Well, I kind of get on board with that. But my thing is, if you think about even as just paramedics now as we are, I mean, how many pediatric intubations are we all doing, yet we're still expected to know how to do them? I mean, I think that becomes an issue, I think, of training and making sure that no matter whether you have 5,000 paramedics or 50,000 paramedics, that they are trained. And again, this goes back to the profession type angle. If this is a profession and this is the type of skill that we're supposed to be proficient in, then the health industry, the healthcare industry as a whole, and our agencies that we work for and things like that, should be providing us with those clinical opportunities to keep our skills, you know, out of less proficient.
Look, you know what? You're banging your head up against the exact same wall that we always bang our head up. It's
like
either
it.
There's an aspect that we play a part in this, you know, in our own professionalism, and then there's the larger aspect of what is the medical community willing to embrace from us, and then what is the community itself, the government, you know, our support structure, our government, willing to pay for those services. What do we want to pay for those services through, the T word, taxes, you know, or anything else, because it's going to cost money, and they want their police department and their fire department. I mean, keep in mind, when you have this type of industry, you have four things that you've got to keep in mind to keep the industry alive. You have skills, which you're addressing right now. You're saying, hey, you know what? Raise the bar, make the skill level paramedic. That's your entry point, and then we go from there. And then you got to have personnel. Well, you know what? You got to have enough people that are willing to make that sacrifice to make that, to gain those skills, so they can address the needs of the community. And
all
guess
right, but
what? That's hooked into. Hold on. Guess what? That's hooked into pay. Because it's just like the nursing community when the hospitals and everybody else said, you know what, we need more nurses. And there were people saying, I don't want to freaking do that job. That's a crap job and it's crap pay. So all of a sudden, nurses' starting pay is in the high five figure range. And then the final aspect of what you have in the nursing, once you are indoors, and we all know this from sitting on the bus, is job growth and a direction. And that's another thing that we don't have in this community. Everybody else seems to have it. I was talking to a cop the other day, and he said, yeah, you know, I can be ESU, I can be internal, I can be this, I can be that. And it's like he probably said 40 different choices. What do we got as paramedics? We can be CCs, you know, we can be transport, we can be emergency. In many places they mix that, you know. So tell me where, you know, the get out from that is, you know, the open door to that higher level.
Well, I think part of the issue is that we have to be able to start somewhere. And you mentioned before about, you know, these people to making a sacrifice to get this training. I mean, you know, to me, I'm not buying that. I'm not settling for that. It's not a sacrifice. If this is the job that you want to do, then you're going to do what you have to do the job. It's
but
not
why
a sacrifice.
Would you want to, if you're standing in the outside, why would you want to do this job? Sell me on this job. The pay ain't so great.
Well, I mean, that's all part of it. I mean, the pay is part of the equation. You know, it's like, you know, you can't expect to be providing this higher level of care, and you can't expect, you know, to say, okay, we're going to be – everyone's going to be a paramedic and then not provide everyone with paramedic pay. You know, there has to be – and I think that the pay issue is tied into the educational – it's tied into that education issue.
Well, I think that's part of it, and I think job growth is another part of it because, you know, there's an aspect that you can't continue to do the lifting and straining that you're in the field, you know.
Right, but if you think about how many more – types of support type jobs and supervisory level jobs and management type jobs and things like that would be available if you had a larger pool of paramedics that you had to, control, but, you know, the
supervise.
Well, supervise, like Russell said about as far as like skill, like why wouldn't there be the type of management type positions or supervisory level type of positions that would ensure that this higher pool of paramedics are proficient in the skills that they're expected to perform out in the field. And then you know, the more you have, you're going to have more opportunities for people to move into those type of roles. I mean, on top of, again, like you mentioned, the CC and the flight medic and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the other aspect is there's going to be pushback, and I can see this pushback that said, how many times, remember when you first, you probably don't, but when you first became a medic, and you were first deciding to become a medic, and the people out there, the medics out there, and the people that you work with said, you know, you should be an EMT for X amount of years, and start that debate. I mean, that debate's out there. How many years should you be an EMT before you become a medic? Well, there are a lot of people who say,
who will say, who will say whatever. But I think that that's part of the process. I mean, what about, even we were talking before about nurses. I mean, who says you have to be a nurse or be some sort of healthcare provider before you become a nurse? You go and you become a nurse.
Right.
Nobody's expecting you to do anything before you become a nurse. Nobody's saying, oh, you have to be a junior nurse before you get to have your RN. You know, why should it be any different to become a paramedic? You know, and listen, I'm not, and again, this isn't against a specific level, because there, you'll get people who will say, oh, I know EMTs that can run circles around paramedics, and I know.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? And that whole argument, and that's not my argument. My argument is not, if you have EMTs that can run circles around paramedics, then those paramedics need to get retrained and need to get, you know, some help.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that, again, ties back into the profession. And as a profession, if we're going to be saying that this is what we're demanding as far as pay and things like that, we have to start somewhere. If you're saying, well, you know, we want more pay for paramedics, but the EMTs can keep volunteering. You know, who wants to pay paramedics for that? Why pay more money to paramedics? You got EMTs that will show up and truck somebody off to the hospital in the back of the ambulance.
Well, that brings us back to public perception of what we do and what they get it. You know, I mean, when you're sitting there talking about, hey, listen, I'm going to give you a cell phone with 4G versus 3G, you know, people understand that. And if they don't understand the technicalities about it, they know that they're going to get their video downloads faster. Okay. Yeah. When you say, listen, you know, you're going to be better off with a paramedic going to the hospital if you have a heart attack than with an EMT, they don't understand why.
And I think that's why that conversation was going on before that you mentioned, as far as calling everybody a paramedic or everybody a medic, because the public perception is, well, a paramedic, that means, you know, that's somebody that can do stuff for me in the ambulance, as opposed to getting tagged with that ambulance driver, you know.
But what do you think, I mean, but look at the force, not, or I was going to say look at the backlash, and I don't necessarily know there would be backlash, but if you call, you know, we're now officially called from this day forward medics. Everybody in the field is called a medic, whether you're an EMT, MTI, whatever you are, you know, or a full, you know, CC medic, you're still called a medic. All right. The public now has a single marker that they can understand what's coming out to them. Now, then you have within the public a gaining of knowledge of saying, well, what level medic are you? Are you a basic medic? Are you an intermediate medic? Are you a paramedic?
But this is part of what, I mean, I had in the episode notes was, you know, trying to find this identity. How are we supposed to try to cling to any type of identity? We can't even figure it out for ourselves. We were all over the place with these different levels. I mean, shouldn't we be starting somewhere? Yeah, listen, I'll meet you here. I'll even go as far as saying, why don't we just go ahead and just call everybody an EMT? You know, for that matter, why say paramedic?
Well, that's what they started with.
You know.
That's what they started with. And then the pushback was you had people who were learning these skills far and above what the standard skill sets were and were really, you know, steeped in the profession, understood medicine, understood drugs, were doing advanced things. And they were being lumped in with these people who had 120 hours of training and, you know, could either serve fries at McDonald's or come in and, you know, picked up somebody off the street.
Yeah, you know what?
And that's – go ahead.
I got somebody else on the line. I want to bring them in to get somebody else's opinion and you know, see what their thoughts are on it. Hi, who's this?
This is Taylor Michael from New Orleans. How are you?
How you doing?
Hey, Taylor.
Outstanding. I'm a hospital corpsman in the United States Navy, and some of the training that we have to go through parallels that of EMT and ATLS and all those things. And it's funny because a lot of what we can do as corpsmen exceeds that by far of what an EMT can do, an EMT basic, that is.
Right.
And
yep.
It just kind of gets to me sometimes when you see that a person is capable of something, but technically isn't okay to do it, because we're talking about saving lives, you know. Like, there shouldn't be, and not only did they have the, I think it's the good citizen law, where, you know, someone who isn't professionally trained may attempt to help. And I get the reason why, you know, it's there, one, for job availability, and to know this person is capable of this and that. and two, because they don't want someone doing something that they're not quite there yet.
Well,
you know,
Taylor, wait, you know, the Good Samaritan, you know, I don't want to stop you from the direction you're going in, because I like the direction you're going in, but the Good Samaritan law isn't for us. Once you become trained a medical person, that no longer applies. The Good Samaritan law is for the general public. So if they were trying to do the right thing, that they couldn't, you couldn't take their home and living away from them because they screwed up. I mean, that's really where the Good Samaritan law comes in. Right.
I understand that, but that's my point, though, is that you have that law in place to protect public citizens from doing the right thing, but you don't have it in place for professionals trying to do the right thing. You know,
I think
what I'm saying?
I think
it doesn't make sense to protect the daily people and then not protect people. Yeah, they're trained to do it, but are you going to hold that against them? It's the same way as having a boxer.
They don't have that certification level yet, even though you might be trained in that. I mean, I've met people and I know people, like you said, that okay, I've been trained to do IVs, but I'm not a paramedic, so I can't do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you get people who are phlebotomists out there who become EMTs, but they can't start IVs on the ambulance because that's not their level of certification. You know, and this goes to what I'm trying to point out is, you know, why should we be having all of these different levels and having this confusion?
I agree. I think it should be a basic EMT and then advanced on your hours. That's what I think it should be.
What's that?
I agree. I think it should be, you know, EMT, like a basic EMT certification, and you are qualified by your hours. You know, a person who has 1,000 hours, a person who has 120 hours is treated as such, you know.
But then I think we want to get back to where we wind up being, where you're going to have people all over the place that aren't, because you're going to have people who are just fine by just, you know, driving the ambulance and taking blood pressure. They're not going to be motivated to get that additional training, you know.
Right.
And you're going to
they can be 80 hours with ambulance driving. That could be their, you know, you see what I'm saying? Like you have.
Well, listen,
so many
I'm all for that too.
So
I mean, listen, if you know, because, I mean, a big part of this, too, is there's a cost factor involved, of course, as to why I think we're at where we are to begin with, is that, you know, they can't pay, you know, all these paramedics to be on ambulances. You know, you have to have EMTs because it just the finances just aren't there to pay medics to run around and do BLS calls on ambulances, because the majority of the calls that we do wind up being, you know, BLS. But, you know, the problem is we wind up, you know, in the end having the public suffer because the agencies and you know, counties and government and whatever don't want to pay, you know, the medic salaries, you know.
You know,
yeah,
it's
you
so
know,
far gone that – sorry, go ahead.
Well, there's an aspect of this hourly, you know, that you rate a certain level if you've been on the bus enough, and I'll be, you know, straight up with you, Taylor, is that there is a certain amount of education, and this is an aspect of why we get that look when we go into the ED from a lot of nurses, because they've gone, they have a degree associated, many cases, in most cases now, they have a degree associated with their title. They have a level of education that they really understand about medicine, drugs, drug interaction, and things. Now, granted, I know there's a lot of medics out there who would agree with this as well. You walk into the ED and you show them the EKG, you know, with the tombstone T waves, and they look at you like, you know, a deer in the headlights, and they don't know what the hell's going on. And it's like you have to sort of control the initial triage from there. So I don't think hours is quite enough. I think education has to be there. But, you know, take
a
top-down approach.
There has to be saying, okay, this is what it is. You know, this paramedic is a standard. If you want to be an EMS, you have to be a paramedic. You have to take the training. You have to take the hours to be a paramedic. And then and go from there. I mean, you're going to get medics who are going to complain, well, I don't want to do BLS calls, you know. But most of the time, we're doing them anyway. Half the time, you're doing the BLS call anyhow. You get sent to a diff breather. Half the time, it's not really a diff breather. It's
honestly,
you know, you wind up, you know, doing the BLS call anyhow.
And I'll be honest with you. The reason you don't want to do BLS calls is because somewhere along the line, somebody told you you didn't have to. That you were higher. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, if system were set up where you're a medic and you go in, you get assigned to a job and you do whatever that job is, but your pay is consummate with the professional standing you have, I would do BLS jobs all day. I'd consider it lucky, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's part of being, I think, when we talk about being, you know, a professional. You're a professional. This is your job, and part of that job is you know, BLS calls. If you think about BLS, it's basic life support. You're providing the basics to that patient because that's what they require. They require advanced, and you're prepared to give them the advanced life support. You know, it doesn't have to be one or the other, and this is why I say having that one standard title, that one standard of training, you know, at the highest that we can give it, you know, initially being paramedic is what I think we should be striving for. I know, Russell, I mean, you make a great point, and I agree with you as far as, you know, skills and proficiency and all that. I mean, I 100% agree with you, but I think that there is ways to make that happen. I mean, every nurse in the ER isn't doing all the skills they've learned, you know, constantly either.
Exactly.
on a daily basis. So there's a way to be proficient in the skills and the way to have that training and to make it available. And, of course, this stuff costs money. You know, it does cost money. It does get people on board. But I think if we can show as other industries and the healthcare industry as a whole that we are indeed a profession and this is what we're looking to do, they'd be more apt to open these doors for clinical, you know, more clinical practice and more clinical hands-on.
You got a positive end of that right there, Jim, in the sense that, yeah, we raise the bar, we raise the standards, we're now level professionals, but we still are missing those two other parts, and that part which is the very amorphous pay part is that's going to be a real hurdle because they, you know, I think the medical community is already stinging from the lack of support or the way they get paid now. You know, I mean, and I don't want to get into a political discussion. We're dealing with a healthcare crisis. You know, whatever side of the fence you stand on politically, you agree that healthcare today is not what it should be. And part of that reason is that the hospitals, how many hospitals in New York City alone have gone out of business because of funding, you know, and now they're talking about yanking even more funding. So we're struggling for this professional level where recognition when there's a withdrawal of funds.
So, yeah, but at the same time, I think, you know, I think that EMS is slowly becoming a more active part in the healthcare, for patients out there. You know, we're getting more and more involved and doing more and more with things. If you look around and the things that we're doing now, you know, getting involved in is not just the whole, you know, scoop them off the ground and take them to the hospital. It's more, you know, between the equipment that we're using that's becoming more and more advanced, you know, the drugs that we're using, and even things like you talk about these community paramedicine type programs that are starting to crop up now. These are all the type of things that are making us a bigger part of healthcare. But yet we're still kind of struggling along with these titles, you know, and these skill sets, you know, I mean,
we're struggling along with not these, the titles and the skill sets are internal. What we're struggling along with is recognition and understanding of the people who are outside our environments. I think that's really where it is because, you know, how many times, Jim, do you have a doc come up to you and ask you what were the living conditions of the patient? You know,
right.
What was going on? How many times, honestly?
Oh, it depends. That goes to the doc. I mean, sometimes that depends upon the doctor's perception, and this is where we talk about perception and their perception of EMS and what we're doing, you know, as part of the healthcare role. If they're thinking we're just these people that just grab somebody out of their home and drag them to the hospital, and now here's this guy, here's the patient doc, you know, and they're half listening to you because in their mind, you're just an ambulance driver.
I'm going to tell you.
I think the doctors that know that you're a paramedic and the doctors that recognize what a paramedic does take a bigger interest in what we did.
We even have some doctors here that know what a paramedic does and still don't trust us. So it's.
But why is that though? Why do you think that?
Because it's their name on the line. It's their ass on the line. That's why, because they don't. they see themselves as doctors, as people who really went to school, did residencies. They've gone through all this, and so they don't think that you can ever measure up to what they did. And because of that, your responsibility should not be given to them. You know, for if you mess up because you're not advanced as they are, it's their ass on it. You know.
Taylor, I'll take that every day of the week over what I believe the problem is. You know, because what you're saying is, hey, you got a guy who's maybe a little defensive about his license and what he had to do to earn it, and maybe not really respecting the skill sets that we bring to the table. But I'll tell you something, at least that guy knows the role that we play, and he can be educated as far as the skill sets. He can have demonstrations of an unstable arrhythmia that was brought in and stabilized before he got to it. Okay, mm-hmm. It's the people out there that don't even ask, don't even give a second thought, that Jim was referring to, that we're just ambulance drivers. It's not even that we're ambulance drivers, dude. They don't know how the patient got to the hospital.
Right, they don't know the whole
they
thing.
They don't even care. You know,
half of them don't know the protocols we're working under, what we're able to do, and things like that. And I think it's the doctors that are aware of what a medic is and what we've done, and are aware of what we can do are the ones that take a bigger interest. You know, I think part of it, like Taylor mentioned, you know, they've got this attitude of this education thing, and I think that goes back to what I'm trying to kind of point out tonight is, you know, if they're aware that everyone that walks through that door in an ambulance with a patient is a paramedic, they know what type of training we have. There's no question what type of training that we have and what we've you know accomplished as far as education wise, at least at the bare minimum being the paramedic, you know what I mean? And so the doctor, you know, if they're gonna have that type of an attitude, then that's, you know, there's nothing you can really do to change that besides, like you said, Josh, trying to educate them a little bit more on the soup to nuts of what we do. But if they know that off the bat, anyone that comes through the door with an ambulance and with a patient on a stretcher is a paramedic, they know what that training is.
Or they have expectations.
Right, exactly.
But are you guys saying that when you bring a patient in, the patient leaves your you give it to the nurse, and then the doctor goes and just deals with the patient from there and doesn't, you know, question where, because if that's the case, that's what you're talking about, that's what it sounds like you're talking about, where he doesn't even know how the patient got there, as you said. All of that history, you know, the living conditions, everything is completely, you know, ignored. And that is a huge
yes.
part of the diagnosis and the treatment. And that's really ridiculous. I didn't think that was what was going on. That's what
I mean,
you're
think
saying?
About how much the documentation.
That's exactly what's happening.
I mean, Russell, do you think that we've got doctors and stuff reading our charts when we bring them into the hospital? I don't think they read our charts unless there's an issue with you know the outcome of the patient.
We see the patients first every time. Then they ask us, what do we think? You know, what did we write down? What did we take vitals? What did we observe? What did we ask about their pain scale and the acuteness of all their problems and things like that. So I didn't know that's how it was in a civilian hospital. That's pretty shameful, honestly.
So you are. So, Taylor, so what we're addressing now is the military structure of EMS, and you're a corpsman, and so what you're addressing is how it works within the military structure, where, you know, docs have a certain role, nurses have a certain role, corpsmen have a certain role, and
mm-hmm.
everybody understands that role, and they understand the process, and they're hungry for the information you can provide. Is that sort of an accurate picture of what you're telling me how it works?
It is. It's very structured in that way, in that sense that, you know, the corpsman does so much. The corpsman sees the patient first. The corpsman and they want the corpsman to learn. They want the corpsman to kind of get a feel for what it's like. And then, you know, if medication needs to be pushed, the corpsman does it. I've pushed medication through IVs a dozen times, but with, you know, a nurse out observing. You know, not sitting there saying, no, you have to do this and let me do it now. But she just watches. You know, and if you're doing something wrong, she corrects you. It's almost a very learning environment. Even though it's not meant to be, it really is. And I think the reason that it's okay for that to be the case, and the reason things go so smoothly in that fashion, is because there is no lawsuits in the military. You know, that we can't sue each other. So I think that's the difference. That's why I said I think it's because the doctor thinks it's his ass that he doesn't care. He doesn't want the paramedic doing all these things. He doesn't want the EMT basic doing anything. I think that's where that comes from.
Well,
that's the only difference I can see.
Also, So I think there's also a basic structure in the military of this, you know, tiered approach of, you know, different levels do different tasks and different jobs and, you know, are responsible for reporting sort of up the ladder or down the ladder. And the other thing that, you know, I've gotten back from, like, guys that that were overseas and serving and stuff like that is when the shit hits the fan, all hands and asses are in the air working. You know, it's like the saying was all you saw was elbows and asses because everybody was working. And when you have that sort of environment, a nurse has to rely on the corpsman to be able to pick up some of the slack that she has to offlay, and the doctor is probably looking at the nurse to pick up some of the slack that he has to offlay. So, you know, he does the most in the highest level of triage. She's doing the second. You're doing the third. And now you're all doing jobs that you weren't quite meant to do, maybe except for the doctor, but you should know how to do them so you can pick up the slack because, you know, when all hands are on deck, they've all got to be there. And we're
even
not,
in the
you
field.
Know, in the civilian world, they don't get that mentality. I mean, it's really, you know, it doesn't seem to be. I mean, if you're angry at me, don't email Jim. Email me at wantnew@wantnew.com. All right? Just let's get that out there first. But the mentality is that, you know, we bring them in, and then the nurses take over from there, and they do their 9-to-5 gig or their whatever their hours are, and they're on and off, and that's it. There's no extension. There's no picking up the slack. They're not going to suddenly start doling out meds because the doctor's not available to do it. If the doctor's not available, they wait.
Right. Even in the field, it's so. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, listen, we're not going to solve, you know, this problem, of course, tonight. But
What?
But, you know, I'm hoping that maybe we can just get some thought process going on with this. As always, you know, we talk about, you know, all this what we're speaking about tonight. And this, you know, I think, like, they did recently that they rearranged some of the curriculum and the guidelines and they did away with the EMTP and they made a paramedic and things like that. And I'm saying to myself, you know, that everyone's jumping up and down. This is this great thing they did with
all surface bullshit.
Yeah, but it's all it really did. It's the same old, same old. It's just, you know, the same stuff that's going on. It's everyone just going along to get along and there's no real improvements being made. You know, and it's like they do the next shiny object. Oh, we just changed the American Heart Association guidelines. Look at this over here. Now everyone starts focusing on new CPR guidelines. You know, for the same dead patients we've been treating. You know, for how long? You know, but yet as an industry we don't get to grow because we keep get sidetracked. You know, we get to grow. We don't get to focus on what's going to take us to that next level. You know, and I'm not sure if – I don't know if, you know, making everybody a paramedic is that thing that's going to take it to the next level. But I think it's something that might focus people to perceiving us as a profession and perceiving us as an industry to, you know, be reckoned with and to be paid appropriately and trained appropriately, you know, rather than just this industry that's sort of – you know, kind of mishmash together to drag people to the hospital because they call 911.
You know, it's
so
amazing.
Much more we can do.
It's amazing, Jim, how we have these conversations and it seems that all roads sort of point in the same direction in terms of it's really got to come from the public. And the public isn't going to do anything because they don't know there's anything wrong. It's just like, you know, with the infrastructure in the country. I mean, people knew that their local bridge might have a shaky girder or something like that, or the concrete might be peeling off of it because they drive by it every day and they see it. But they don't know that that bridge got a D-minus rating and could be falling down in a year until recently because it's hit the news, it hit the spotlight. And I think there's got to be an aspect of that, that the public has to get involved in this or be made involved, you know, be drawn in and said, there's a difference in what you get when you call an ambulance. And if you don't know the difference, then that could mean your life.
Right. The only time the public finds out about anything that we do is when it's something goes wrong. I mean, Russell's actually done a few blog posts on, you know, EMS in a city where, you know, you had a crew parked around the corner, didn't respond. You know what I mean? And that's when the public gets
aware of what's going on and what we can do. You
know,
the snowstorm in New York City when all that stuff went on. Then you had stuff in the paper about that.
But they know what the different levels of what we do?
No, of course not, because they see somebody suffered due to something that we did, and
the guy with the diesel didn't do anything.
And most of the time, it's a dispatch to crew type issue or something along those lines. Never, you know, brought to light as far as certification levels and things like that. I mean, we did have one. I'm trying to think of the story where you had the medic that got in trouble because he hung lidocaine or something like that instead of normal saline or something along those lines.
And
then blamed his T for doing it or something. And, you know, that was the only time I think certification level started coming into play, you know, recently, where that was kind of brought to light.
And again, it's only with mistakes.
Right, exactly.
You know,
there's not a proactive educational process going on out there to let the public know the different levels. And, you know, and I think if the public knew that some of these volunteers that show up to their house may not even be EMT, they might just be first responders, they're going to be thinking, well, why am I not getting a fully trained provider to do anything?
Hey, this isn't New Jersey.
Right, yeah.
Oh, shit. I can't believe you said that.
But it's true, though. But New Jersey does operate like that, where you'll have, you know, people show up in an ambulance, and some of them are not even EMT trained. They're first responder trained. And it's, you know, it's like, what would the public say if they realized that the people showing up at their homes and the people showing up to these car accidents and things like that aren't trained to the highest level that they would expect someone to show up to save their life? I mean, this is what we're doing, isn't it? We're not supposed to be saving lives. We're not here playing games, you know, and the public is expecting us to show up and save a life. They're not expecting us to show up and call for somebody else to come and save their life, which is what happens.
Well, and they don't even really see that, because in some ways there is some care in the visual aspect of, hey, there's an O2 mask.
An ambulance showing up with lights on and sirens,
right.
And they're running around looking at this.
Help is here.
Right, help is here. I'm saved now. But they don't real. But again, this is why there's no proactive education for the public going on that's showing them and telling them what could be, you know, if only, you know, and you know, of course, there's a lot of if onlys, and it goes again with finances and training and personnel and all that, and it's not something that would be changed overnight, you know. But
I have a question, Russ. Are you still on the line?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever heard me say, I mean, I hate the broken record thing, but that we own this, that it's our responsibility to get to the next level?
I think so, at some point.
You know, I, what do you think of that? I mean, am I wrong? I mean, call me out on this. You know, I sort of feel that it's our responsibility to be pushing the organizations that say they represent us, and get them to represent us. You know, get some commercials on the air of what a EMT does or a paramedic does instead of a nurse in an ambulance. I mean, get some standards out there that the states are adopting nationwide instead of, you know, by community. Who else is going to do that if it's not us pushing back on these organizations?
That's a tough question. I mean, I'm kind of hoping that this, I'm kind of hoping that this field EMS bill that goes through kind of starts moving things in that direction. But I mean, we'll see.
Do you know
what
the status is on that?
As far as I know, it's been introduced. They're probably waiting on the next session of Congress to introduce it. But as far as I know, it's a bill in draft, and it's going to be introduced in the House, which means it'll have to go through committee first, and then passed in the House, and, you know, the whole legislative deal. So it's going to take a while for it to get there. But in the meantime, I mean, and there was something about this about NAEMT how they tend to only play towards a smaller group of providers that are like that in that suburban and rural setting. But they don't really represent very much of us that work in the urban centers.
Yeah, well, they like to fight over who's going to get the next election. Boy, I've heard that one before, right?
Yeah.
Well,
and so, and so, it's hard to find an organization that really represents the whole of EMS providers, because the ones that are supposed to really don't.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it goes back to where, you know, when they go ahead and try to represent, or they do studies and things like that, they include all these little subdivisions of EMS, and, you know, kind of play to everyone's ego when they're doing it, you know, and, you know, how great EMTs are and what they do and how great the paramedics are, and what, instead of trying to focus on the changes that need to be made to get that perception that we need out there to the public. And I think, you know, I mean, we talked about this before too, things like EMS Week, where we wind up, you know, spending a week taking blood pressures and showing kids a tour of the ambulance, rather than trying to really educate the public and saying, you know, this is what paramedics do, this is what we can provide, in this region, you call 911, this is what's going to happen. You know, you're going to get, you know, whatever the first responder, whether it's an EMT or direct paramedic response, you know, telling people what to expect, what's going to happen when they call 911.
So I would say that in my area we've done a fairly good job at educating people about paramedics, because every time that they call, they pretty much get a paramedic. So
right. Do you work one medic, one EMT, Russ? I forget.
On the ambulance, yes.
You know,
I don't agree with you. I don't think that's a very good education for the public, because the public basically, you know, every time they get a paramedic, God bless them, but they still don't understand the difference. And in the system where, let's say, there's some sort of an emergency or whatnot, and the paramedics are few and far between, there are far more volunteers and there are far more EMTs, and not all EMTs are volunteers, but if you don't like
we also don't have that problem as far as volunteers go, because we're an urban center. Everybody around here is paid.
All right.
That makes it easier.
Across the country, though, right? But when you talk about across the country, you have a lot more volunteers that go on. And I think,
true,
you know, I mean, even you take someplace like New Jersey or a certain, even upstate New York and whatnot, where you've got volunteers. I think if the people knew that, well, when you call 911, we tone out the volunteers and we'll tell them out 2 or 3 times. And if we don't answer, then we're going to go ahead and call the closest paid agency to come respond. And most of the time, at that point, it'll probably try to do BLS first if it's not an ALS call. And then when they get there, they might call for a paramedic if you call for chest pain. And, you know, the person listening to that is going to say to themselves, what do you mean you're going to tone them out 3 times? You're going to send, you know, a neighboring BLS, paid BLS, you know, agency to come respond? How many minutes is that taking? How many minutes does that mean I have to wait longer? You know, they don't realize that process is time ticking away from providing, you know, life-saving capability that we're supposed to be providing to people, you know, and what they expect from us. You know, and listen, we all, the glory of saving lives is far, you know, far from the reality, you know, few and far between the call types that we do. But their
that time is muscle, and you know, you can roll with that and be secure with that one, Jim. You know, that the life saving aspects, the ability to get nitro and oxygen, even though oxygen is now being debated. You know, there's certain life saving things that we can do that spare heart muscle. Maybe not change that person's life and outcome in the end of things, but we usually at least make it better.
Right, but people are expecting to have, you know, to them it's their emergency, and they expect to have, you know, as much as possible presented to them when they call 911. Not have a maybe you're going to get a response from the local volunteer if they can get out, you know, and if they can't, then we're going to send a paid agency from the next county over, or even another volunteer agency from the next county over to come respond to you. And maybe in urban settings, it's not as big of a problem because, again, it's paid and you're going to have that response. You know, you're not going to have that issue. You know, but the issue, I think, in the urban setting revolves around the point of still having EMTs responding to calls and having to wait for medics or trying to intercept paramedics, on calls where ALS is required. So
imagine doing that with fire, where you send out a fly car to see if it's a real fire or a trash can fire.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
and
it's not going to happen. You're going to get a full fight. You're getting a full complement of, fire apparatus going to calls because they don't know until they get there what it is.
And they recognize that every minute counts, and that was the big thing about a fire last time. And I see that we're running out of time, so I do.
Yeah, just about out of time. So, listen, guys, again, we're not solving it tonight, so we all know that. But I'm hoping that maybe we'll get the discussion going on. I want to thank Taylor, of course. I think his call dropped. So we lost him somewhere along the way. So I thank Taylor for calling in. Thank him for his service as well.
Yes.
And Russell, thank you as well, man, for calling in. Appreciate you taking the time and popping in, giving your opinion.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. But you're still over at hybridmedic.com, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So go check out Russell's blog, hybridmedic.com. Of course, there'll be a link in the show notes as well. And Josh, as always, thanks for joining me
thank you.
On the show. Russell, maybe we'll see you next week, or let me know you want to talk about a topic. Maybe we'll bring something up that's a little less volatile.
We'll see.
All right. I'll talk to you later, Russell.
You too. See you.
Bye-bye. All right, Josh, thanks for joining me again. I guess we'll see you next week.
That's it. That's it, Jim. We'll do it again next week.
Exactly. Well, out of time, everybody. As always, Jim Hoffman, Josh Knapp from EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.